After Rufus Du Sol released their debut album, Atlas, they took themselves to Berlin. Immersed in the electronic dance culture there, they wrote almost all of their second album, Bloom. And then they came back to Australia and they released this single. Which showed music critics and fans that this act had so much more to give on a new album, and people loved it. So for them, the pressure was off, and they decided to write something just for themselves. No rules, no limitations, and pure artistic freedom. What resulted is a track that shows vulnerability, real restraint, and then this ultimate release. Some say that it shouldn't be a hit, but it absolutely is. And so welcome to Inspired. I'm Linda Mariano, and this is the extremely personal story behind Inner Bloom by Rufus Du Sol. We've got 1, 2, 3 of the Rufus boys in here today. So it's a massive welcome back to Triple J, to John, James and Tyrone. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Where should we begin with this song?
Where to begin? I don't know. I guess we could set the time and place a little bit.
Yeah.
It was 2015. At the start of this record, we decided to move to Berlin. So on the first record, we sort of located ourselves on the coast of New South Wales to, you know, take inspiration from that place and infuse it into whatever that record was. And we decided to do that with Berlin and go to Germany for the start of this record. So
why Berlin?
We were just getting into a lot of music that was coming out of there.
Do you remember which artists you were listening to or being associated with?
At the time, we were listening to a lot of David August and he was living there.
Like a lot of that more emotive, textural, electronic music, or that side of dance, I guess, that was a little bit more intriguing to us at the time. So we absorbed as much as we could and we started writing ideas. We started getting a bit more flow, getting a bit more of an understanding of the aesthetic that we wanted to chase. But it wasn't until we came back to Australia that we started really getting some ideas popping up in front of us. And so I think it was March 2015, we'd come back and then that was when the Inner Bloom seed was planted, I guess.
In that time period, we were trying to find the first single for the record. We'd made an aesthetic of a record. We'd had songs that we loved, but we needed one song that was going to sum up the record in a nutshell, if you can do that. Mm. And You Were Right ended up coming out like a month before we were working on Inner Bloom. And I think there was a liberation in putting a song out and an excitement in knowing that that was the first flavor of the record. So I think, you know, fast forward a month after putting it out, we were free. We were in a space where we didn't have to make any song that was abiding by any laws. Like it didn't need to sit under a certain time length. It didn't have to have a chorus. It didn't have to do anything. We were just kind of like, you know, we stumbled on the initial ideas. We all connected with it and then we were like, oh, well, let's spend some time and just see this song through. It doesn't matter where it ends up. Like, let's have some fun.
Pure freedom.
Yeah.
So tell me about that seedling of Inner Bloom.
So we had a little bit more structure in the days when we were working in Australia as opposed to Berlin. When You Were Right came about, that sort of happened in the evening and then we chased it and we started realizing it was really important when an idea presented itself to chase that spark. We were just mucking around. I was flicking through like sounds on this mini V analog pad synth thing, like a plug-in on the computer. And Tyrone started playing these chords. The grand feeling of those chords was the first thing.
Is it the chords that's kind of start the song
that
and
start
set the
song?
So this?
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was that sound. And, you know, that's in general, that was the thing with this song, was that a lot of the initial sounds and initial ideas that came through, everything worked organically. We didn't have to rip apart and try and change all the sounds too much. It just really, it just happened. There was such a sense of flow to it.
How did you feel when Tyrone first started playing these chords.
It was just like a really epic, grand thing. And we were like, we have to try and flesh this out to some degree. So, yeah, we stayed back and sort of just fleshed out, like, I guess the chords, just made the bass line, that, which is that really straight. And we were referencing David August for that bass line. So there was no swing. It was like, just hyper robotic.
The bass line is basically a very close reference to David August's song Epicure. It's a really similar bass line in just like the same pattern and space.
I would sometimes dip out early and I was trying to, you know, keep structured to my life. I came back to the studio often, like in the morning, and would find like little things that they'd like continued through the night. And it was always interesting to see like whether they'd gone crazy or whether it was a legit, like, you know, feeling. I remember coming into the studio by myself this one morning, like opening the latest project and hearing like this loop and this beat and the bass, and was like, yes, this is like such
they
a good
did something
feeling.
Good.
Yeah, the boys did good.
And I think that's really a really cool thing about the way we work, is that it's really nice having like three producers, three songwriters, three brains, that if one or two, you know, people work through the night, then you can constantly have a refreshed perspective from the other person who comes in. You can kind of rotate, it's like clockwork. That was a really cool thing that we discovered on that record, was that we could work like that.
Was there ever a point where you clashed on this song, or one of you said, this is amazing, let's make it a real radio single and let's keep it to 3 minutes 30 as opposed to what it is?
This is one of the rare ones. You know, we often go through those conversations. It's usually pretty seamless, but there's an energy in the room when a good song or something is exciting all three of us, and there's many ways it can go. But like with this one, it was just free and everyone was on the same page. It was the smoothest song I'd say we've ever written. Like every single idea that someone put to the table, we'd find a synth sound, we'd see the idea through, and it would stay. So like the initial synth, bass line, the lead line towards the end. That was the preset that we'd opened many times before and hadn't found the place for it. It really followed like from a start to finish. Like we had the initial loop, the chords, then John came in, like there was the strings, and we bonded over, like we're like, what are we going to do with this now? Where do we take it? I'm like, well, let's just have fun today. Let's not make a short song. Let's see how far we can take it. You know, we were picturing ourselves at Burning Man, even though that we've never been, but like our idea of Burning Man and like staying up till the, you know, the sun's up and in the desert, and then hearing this song, like what would we want it to feel like? I think that led us to like the next chapter of like holding, there's a part where we just hold a chord for a really long time.
With that idea, we wanted to have this feeling or the sensation of it holding the final chord that isn't resolved, so you think the song is almost over and so it's drifting into the distance. And then from there, we didn't want to, like for this next drop, we didn't want it to add anything new. We wanted to just progress what was there, because we could sit on that feeling. We played that loop so many times and it was just beautiful every time.
It feels like exactly how you were feeling when you were making it is copy and pasted to what people feel when they've been listening to it again and again, which is that complete emotional immersion which you were directing this song to. And in terms of lyrics, because we have to talk about the fact that the vocals come in at this kind of 1.5 minute mark and they're almost surprising, but they completely fit the rest of the song. Let's talk about lines like this.
Feels like I'm waiting, like I'm watching, watching you follow.
At what point did the vocals come to you?
It actually started with the end vocals. So like we'd found like a framework of the song, we'd taken the idea pretty far to that second breakdown, like the 5-6 minute mark. I think it was when we were writing that lead that it was like, oh, there's an idea, like, it was like the first take of the "If you want me, if you need me, I'm yours."
Yeah, this line is special.
Yeah.
If you want me, if you need me, I'm yours.
Yeah, it is a really special line. I think we're sometimes aware of when things are, I don't know if cheesy is the right word, but if things are like too simple or too like on the nose, we maybe will try and shy away from those things. But that was an example where it was like, that is so true and free. It's like standing very naked and vulnerable in front of someone and getting rid of all of the shackles that you carry in your life and just freeing yourself of that and feeling completely light and ready to like let go of everything.
If you want me, if you need me, I'm yours.
Yeah, I think that in particular too, when Tyrone went and laid down those vocals and we were like, yes, this is supporting this feeling, particularly with the end lyric, is like when we got that special vulnerability that he's talking about, and that actually ended up being very hard to match. And we were never ever able to replicate that same demo vocal that he originally laid down. So we ended up using the demo vocal in the original song.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah, we tried a lot. Yeah. I mean, like we
like 90 takes or something.
Yeah. It was something silly.
Yeah.
Mm. Do you remember what specific circumstance you were thinking about in terms of if you want me, if you need me?
I don't remember. I remember just sitting in the euphoria of us discovering this lead sound. I don't know.
That kind of sparked it almost, the feeling.
And like walking in, it was like, it was more about not forgetting the idea of the melody. It's like, quickly press record. Yeah, I think it's just the excitement. And I don't know why those words.
Sometimes a lot of the, like while we're writing, Tyrone will just jump in the booth with a vocal melody and we'll spit some gibberish. Generally, Tyrone has these sparks where he says something or sings something offhandedly and it's, you know, coming from a place like deep inside. And I think that could have been one of those times where it just felt really natural.
True, yeah. As you were saying.
Yeah.
True.
There are so many wonderful moments throughout this song, and it's something that I guess means that you can have so many repeat listens and different interpretations. But there's one sound that kind of bookends the track but also goes the whole way through, and that is the crackle sound.
Oh, yes.
You've got to explain what this is.
Yeah, I remember around this time a big thing with referencing a lot of this like sort of textural, like David August type music, Nicholas Jaar music. I remember a lot of times just trawling the internet, going to freesound.org and audio from YouTube, just trying to get all these weird textures. We wanted to get this, you know, more like spine tingly, sensationalism with the sounds. And then this sound was actually the sound I found of this fire, like a match being struck. And you can hear the phosphorus like squealing almost. And it's like, it just had this crazy life to it. So instead of just using a vinyl crackle, we were like, why don't we use this? It's a little bit more original.
It sounds quite breathy as well.
Yeah, you can hear like the air of like, it's like you can hear the oxygen being generated by like the flame, and it's just got this really weird presence. And I remember we put that in on the first night and then just looped it for the whole track, and it just, this space that it exists in, you know.
Let's take it to the conclusion of this song. The song's done now and you're sitting back and listening to it. How did you feel?
I actually remember going for a walk to lunch that day, and I remember us walking down the road like in Alexandria, and we were just like, dude, this is sick, man. This feels so good. We were like, we're really stoked. You know, sometimes you're like lost in the sauce a bit, and you're like, yeah, it's really good, man. And the next day you're like, oh, is this even a good idea? But I remember we felt really
it's funny. John's nodding his head like, yeah, I've gone in there after they've been there all night and there's been some
shit. They were lost in the sauce. But I just remember we felt really confident that this was like a really special song.
It felt very personal too. Like I remember us not feeling a fear of where it ended up. It was very much like a song that felt like we'd accomplished something really special for ourselves. It was 10 minutes or something, like working out whether it was right for a record or to put out I think we ended up putting it out third in the line of songs.
It was. Which, it was one of the singles leading up to the album.
Yeah, like that wasn't really in the vortex of like possibility. We were just so happy with this thing that we'd made that felt so true and so fluid from start to finish, and we didn't need to change it. And like, I think we didn't notice how special it was till it was like an ongoing process of showing friends.
Well, yeah, I think there's two phases to what happened afterwards. There was the phase where we were still in the studio finishing off a bunch of tracks, but when people would come in, we would sit down with them and say, "Are you ready for an experience?" And we'd turn off all the lights.
You put on your lava lamp.
Yeah. We'd actually put on this, like on the big TV in front of us, this footage from like NASA with rockets taking off into space.
Ignition sequence start.
And it just was so mesmerizing, and it fits so perfectly with like the soundtrack that we'd made for it, you know. But I think the second phase was before we released it, we were playing some shows and we started playing it out live. Mm. And I remember that feeling of just playing this song out live to people and watching people who have never heard it before just start crying. Like, there's nothing like that.
Yeah.
I want to know more about that. How'd that feel?
Yeah, I think we just like were just in shock ourselves on stage, looking at us at each other, and coming off stage afterwards just in complete shock of the way that could move people.
Mm. I think the first time that happened, I just heard it secondhand from you, and I was just so taken back by that. And then like seeing it, yeah, I don't know, it just doesn't feel very normal to see people crying at a show. Like, I hadn't cried at a show. Like, so I was just like, it felt like a very unique song where it made people feel comfortable enough to do that when they've never heard it and they don't know what's coming or what's like where it starts and where it finishes, and they're willing to like allow themselves to go there. It was really cool.
If you want me, if you need me,
it's Rufus Du Sol, Inner Bloom for Inspired. And if you liked that, then please feel free to take a second to rate and subscribe. And if you want another episode that talks about dance music with some real emotional soul, then what about Bag Raiders, Shooting Stars? The Australian duo Jack and Chris from Bag Raiders spoke to us about the writing process behind this song, and most specifically about how they came up with that very notable Shooting Stars melody.
We didn't have much gear, we just had a couple of keyboards, and I distinctly remember jamming out the chords and this lead.
Yeah. You know what? I was actually thinking about this morning. Partly where that idea was coming from was like, at the time, I was listening to heaps of Ciara, My Goodies, and stuff like that. There's this like lead that's like, you know, and it's like really annoying, and it goes through the whole song. And I was like, that's such a vibe. Like, make something really annoying.
Yeah.
That like a mosquito-y kind of sound.
Yeah, we called it
sound.
The mosquito. I remember that.
Yeah.
Turn the mosquito
just
up.
Yeah, turn the mosquito. Because it just gets in your head. So that kind of idea, even though it doesn't sound anything like what that does, but the concept of the annoying mosquito is where that came from.
That is a good one if you want to check it out. Otherwise, I'm Linda Mariano. Thank you so much for listening.